This is the Grinlian Report. The unusual, weird news, anomalies, exopolitics. It's Beyond the Fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Grinlian Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
And from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma in the depths of the hollow earth, live and back on the World Wide Web in that dark little corner that we inhabit known as the Grinlian Report, I'm Micah Hanks, your host. Very glad and gracious to be your host. After 2 weeks of hiatus, after traveling around the continental United States, after battling those little miscreants that like to take down people's websites and demolish their life's work, we're back. We're glad to be here. And I'm joined, as always, by the one and only Tyler Pittman. We are the Grinlian Gang, and it is the Grinlian Report. Without further ado, happy Halloween to everyone out there. We're going to be celebrating a special Halloween edition of the program, so gather around one and all, boils and ghouls. Come a little closer to the fire, and make sure to keep an eye over your shoulder at all times, because it's going to be one of those creepy editions of the program. Tyler, Halloween is probably one of my favorite times of the year, and I know, and I can tell, in fact, by the bats and the spider webs on your scarf tonight that you, too, are celebrating Halloween in advance. Have you got big plans for this year's holiday season? Holiday season.
Not really big plans, but I'm going to have a grand time.
A grand time? A grander time than the Great Pumpkin, no doubt.
Indeed.
That's right. I'll be handing out candy to all the little children, no doubt. No, I want to go to... We've got to do some sort of a Grinlian Halloween thing at some point. And no, Paradigm Symposium doesn't count. That doesn't qualify.
We could fry up like a piece of meat and then candy it and bob for it in the bunker commode.
Candied fried meat, yes. Yes, bobbing for candied fried meat. Good evening to Adam Omada, co-conspirator, Geodice, Goblin Slave, Graham of Grimerica, the Hoboter. Who's that? JDB Justin, MIB Jr., Mike Miggs, our good friend of Holiday Maker Travel, and so many more in the chat room tonight. It's always our pleasure to see you there, that little internet block party that gathers and chats amongst themselves and, of course, with us in the interactive sense each week here on this program. Now, like I said, Tyler, we've got so much to get to, so little time to do it, and it is the Halloween edition of the program, but there's actually been a lot of news this week. And so in addition to the creepy stuff, I also want to get around to some of these stories. For instance, what's going on down in Ben and Aaron country in Australia? What's being called a veritable lost world has been discovered, where scientists have said that three new species of animals have been confirmed after their discovery in a rainforest in Australia, protected, they say, literally for millions of years by almost impenetrable stacks of granite boulders. This is the very sort of scenario that the cryptozoologists often cite when they say, hey, maybe creatures from long, long ago could still exist today, and could do so in very specialized ecospheres or habitats that have been protected for long, long periods of time. And scientists say that literally this veritable lost world in Australia has remained protected in this way for millions of years. The new animals are a leaf-tailed gecko, a boulder-dwelling frog, and then also a skink. Do you know what a skink is, Tyler?
Yeah, I think I dated one a while back.
Did you? But there's also, as I understand, there's also a new species of dolphin that's been discovered in Australia, which was not in this same area as the two lizards. The gecko, of course, is essentially a lizard, and a skink is also a lizard. We have blue-tailed skinks and fence lizards that populate this region of western North Carolina, and the blue-tailed skinks are some of the most absolutely gorgeous of the reptiles that you'll see in this region, aside from maybe a copperhead, but you don't want to get close enough to see one. When they're about to shed their skin, they'll turn an almost purplish color, and they're absolutely gorgeous with a dark kind of a red-colored head, but this is, of course, where the name the copperhead comes from, and they're absolutely, well... Tell you the truth, you might survive a copperhead bite, but I wouldn't want to have to go through that kind of an ordeal. Now, that said, the three animals, again, were a gecko, a skink, and a boulder-dwelling frog that were found living in this unique rocky rainforest area near Cape Melville, some 1,500 kilometers northwest of Brisbane, which is, incidentally, Australia's third most populous city. Think about that. This was less than 1,000 miles away from the most populated city in Australia. And they've discovered 3 new species, in addition to, apparently, a new species of dolphin that was also discovered. We have that linked in the Greylian Daily News. The Melville Range is rugged and precipitous and almost unreachable as millions, literally, millions of granite boulders the size of cars and houses are piled hundreds of meters high with a boulder-strewn rainforest on its plateau. Now, all 3 of these new species hide among the labyrinth of the rocky rainforest with the leaf tail gecko, which is 20 centimeters long, emerging at night only to hunt on these rocks and trees for insects and other little meatly morsels that he might digest. Tyler, you should go bobbing for apples with him sometime. Or candied meats, as you said. Where do you come up with this stuff? Bobbing for candied refried meat.
I don't know.
Oh, God, help me.
Have a little candied critter, the little skink.
Yes, yes, let's candy some new Australian skinks. Who cares if they're endangered? Actually, it hasn't been stated that they're endangered, but again, they're new species.
Evidently, they're very well preserved, so.
Yeah, well, yeah, but then again, I mean, they'd have to be few in numbers if they haven't been discovered elsewhere. Interesting. Now, the lead researcher, Dr. Hoskin, and his team flew into the rainforest via helicopter. They plan to return in a few months to continue the search for a new species, including snails, spiders, and small mammals. The far-flung rainforest is a unique ecosystem able to keep away fire and lock moisture between the boulders, helping rare rainforest species to survive for millions of years. That's a fascinating story, again, because anytime we find these specialized environments where new creatures, new varieties of creatures are discovered, it kind of gets our gears turning and makes us think, well, what else could be out there? Now, many would say, again, well, these are little animals. These are small reptiles. So if you're trying to talk about things like dinosaurs hiding out in the Congo, it's just not likely. Certainly it's not likely. But is the possibility still existent? That, I think, is the question on everyone's mind. I've always been very fascinated by those reports, those stories of the Mokele Mbembe and the Imele Untuka, and my favorite, the Ngubu.
Yes.
You know about the Ngubu?
All of these are very cool creatures.
Well, dinosaurian monstrosities that are alleged to still exist down in the parts of the Congo, Tyler.
Well, we've been talking about the reptile and the reptilian uprising for a while.
We've been talking about what?
The reptilian uprising.
You've been talking about what? What? We don't talk about that. We absolutely never, ever, ever talk about that on this program, because as soon as we do, then... Oh, God.
The reptilian uprising.
I spoke too soon. Anyway, you were saying?
I don't know if I'd call it a lost world. It's more like a lost football field.
More like a lost kiddies... swimming pool.
Yeah, or like a secret Pokemon level or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's kind of like that level -1 in Mario Brothers, if you did that weird little trick and everything. And it was really just like a water level that just looped forever. And there wasn't really
the Mario water levels.
Yeah, nobody liked those anyway. Yeah. Which is really funny, though, because, I mean, you could still use the firepower underwater. Made no sense.
I know. The physics were off with that.
Yeah, yeah. I could never suspend my disbelief long enough to enjoy playing those levels until Mario 3 came along, and then there was the frog suit. Tyler, oh, there we go. There it is. That's what I need. I need to start wearing a frog suit. That'll be my Halloween costume. I'll wear a Super Mario Brothers frog suit.
Well, you're running out of time. Just go get some ladies' pantyhose and... 2 pair, and then cut a hole in one of the crotches and pull that over for your shirt. Actually, get a 3rd pair. Yeah, just cut the footy part off the top part, and then put that over your face.
It has been said before that there are some things you just can't unsee, but Tyler, I think, has imprinted an image in all the listeners' minds that will be, it'll be the kind of thing that you can't unremember. Thanks for that, Tyler, but we said it would be a terrifying program tonight, it being Halloween and all, and we're glad to have all of you as our Greylian guests for this week's special edition. What to look out for on tonight's edition of the program? We will be telling some creepy stories. They don't involve skeptics picking us apart at Paradigm Symposium, and there was a fair good amount of that. I had said that I was going to address the virtual skeptics, and specifically Eve. I can't remember her last name. She never actually properly introduced herself to me, but she accompanied Bob Blaskowitz at the event. And on the online virtual skeptics episode following the symposium, they went after David Weatherly. They went after Robert Bevall. And interestingly, they didn't name me by name. But at one point, Eve had basically said, one of the hosts gave a lecture on ghost rockets. And during the lecture, he just didn't really ever say that the ghost rockets were anything. And Bob Blaskowitz jumps in and says, well, Eve, I don't remember it quite like that, but go on. And it's funny because I'd talked with Bob. Again, he's written for Skeptical Inquirer. He's a school teacher. He's an all-around nice guy. Scotty Roberts and I actually like Bob Blaskowitz quite a bit. And Bob, I'd asked him after the fact, I thought, you know, why not ask a skeptic what he thought of my very skeptical, I thought, lecture on ghost rockets? And Bob said it was very conservative. I liked it. The way that you handled everything was really good. And here's Eve on the virtual skeptics saying that, well, I mean, he gave a lecture, but I mean, he didn't say that the ghost rockets were really anything. Well, what would you prefer that I say, that they're aliens? Aliens from the hollow earth, from the lost world, from another dimension, from a gate to hell?
Source of all your nocturnal longing.
Yes. Speaking of, by the way, yeah, well, we'll get to that a little later. Believe it or not, I've actually got a tie-in with what you were alluding to there, Tyler, but this is the whole thing, is that why make a definitive statement about what these alleged UFOs are in the absence of any proof that they would be this or that? I withhold judgment in the absence of the facts, but merely report on the credible source data drawn from the ASRS databases maintained by NASA and other civilian and official organizations that have collected data that seems to pertain to missiles and projectiles of unknown origin. That's what I gave my lecture on. The fact that I didn't say that they were anything specifically, I thought, was a very skeptical approach to the study, not discounting all of those cases based on my want to disbelieve or to establish myself as a debunker.
It's so, kind of interesting that that fact was lost on a quote-unquote skeptic.
I thought so, too. But see, Bob Blaskowitz got it, and I loved how when she said he'd said that he just really didn't say that they were anything, Bob said, well, that's not how I remember it.
But we're going to have to listen to the
It's well worth
broadcast.
Seeing it. And you know what? A former guest of the program, and of course someone I correspond with quite a bit, Sharon Hill, she's also on that program. I enjoy their program. But, you know, again, I had to go after Eve because, again, she was kind of the type, and she was sweet. You know, we talked several times over the course of the weekend. I talked to she and Bob more than a lot of the other people who are in attendance. But I have to say, she was kind of the type that, you know, Bob would be engaging, and he would talk with me. Eve would kind of stand back with this kind of, you know, she always had her eyes, you know, and in crescent moons, and she was always, you know, just kind of, there was ever just this slight hint of a smirk on her face at all times, kind of like, well, no matter what you say, I'm going to disagree with it. She kind of had that attitude.
Like self-righteous, self-centered.
I don't know if I'd say that. I mean, you know, she was friendly, but, you know, she certainly didn't seem to be making an attempt to be as involved and as engaging as Bob Blaskowitz, who was at the Paradigm Symposium last year. But the whole point is that, you know, I don't care what your belief is. You know, I respect Eve's opinions. I respect Bob's opinions. I respect the opinions of P.Z. Myers. I found him to be not very approachable, not very friendly. Frankly, he was, if anything, very standoffish. I think one of the first things he said to me, I said, welcome to Paradigm Symposium. I'm a fellow skeptic. Well, if you say so. And by the way, anything that we talk about, just keep in mind it's going to be on my blog. And I'm thinking, nice to meet you, too.
Yeah, well, PZ is his own creature.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is an evolutionary biologist, and I think that he evolved from some sort of a primordial sludge unlike the rest of us. I mean, he's very different. We'll just leave it at that. But
primordial sludge. I'm just picturing, like, his folks procreating in the primordial sludge.
In the ooze. It looked like something from a Freddy Krueger movie, which we're going to be hearing from some of that later in the program just as well. Some of our favorite horror films. Tyler and I have put together a cavalcade of goblins, ghouls, and monstrosities from the silver screen that we're going to be going over, and we're going to be talking about a few of our favorite cinema horrors on this special Halloween edition of the Graylian Report. So with that, I think it's time, Tyler, to take us out to a break, because when we get back, we're going to get into a few of my favorite things to talk about this time of the year. For instance, urban legends.
And don't forget to tell our listeners they can call in tonight and tell us a scary tale.
Well, we would love to hear scary tales from the listeners. I may have a call or two out to a few of our favorite recurring guests, in fact. We'll see if we can hear from them, but we'd love to hear from you. The call information will be going out to you when we come back. I'm Micah Hanks. It is the Graylian Report. Stay with us. We'll be back. If you are interested in the unexplained, like I am, then you probably want to know everything there is to know about every place there is out there. Anywhere, not just in the United States or in Britain. You want to know all about all the weird stuff anywhere it may be. And one of the less often discussed areas of Fortiana and the unexplained is Australia. And that's why the latest book by Andrew Nicholson, Weird Australia, is a must-have for any paranormal enthusiast's collection. It details and documents reports of yowies, bunyips, and all different kinds of strange happenings that have taken place down under. It's Weird Australia by author Andrew Nicholson, available online as an ebook download on Amazon.com. That's Weird Australia. What are you waiting for? Check it out online right now at WeirdAustralia.com. You know, Tyler, there was this one time, some time ago, I went to Best Buy, and I bought one of those, trauma horror movie three packs, and there was a film, one of the three films included on that DVD, Trifecta of Terror. It was called Evil Clutch.
Really?
Yes. Do you remember Evil Clutch?
Evil Clutch? Was it about like a lady's handbag biting off her fingernails?
Well, it wasn't about a lady's handbag. It was about a lady's...
Clunch? Evil Clunch?
I said Evil Clutch.
Oh.
Anyway. Welcome back to the program. It is the Graylian Report, and we're scaring ourselves here in the bunker. We have all the lights turned off. No, Tyler, we should light some candles and really make this creepy. Can you run down to Studio C and go get the candles?
Sure.
Let's make this an experience that we won't forget. Even if our listeners hope they can forget it, we won't ever forget this. We're going to scare ourselves silly tonight.
By the way, I'll mention it, even though it's your bunker, when you flush the toilet, there's like this terrible plumbing problem that carries on for 3 minutes, so...
Really?
Refrain from that, yeah.
Well, actually, hold on. Tell that in a scary way, though, for the benefit of the listeners. Sure. Okay, go ahead.
Micah, please be mindful of the toilet. It runs...
I'm lost, man. I'm sitting here reading this stuff. I've got to do work.
Sorry, the producer's trying to produce and trying to get the candles. I wanted to hear about the Toilet of Terror. But anyway, well...
That movie's Ghoulies for all you slaves.
Wait, which one is that? The Toilet of Terror?
The goblins coming out of the toilet.
What was that one called?
Ghoulies.
Ghoulies? Well, yes. Tyler, this is one of the stories that really... captured my attention, caught it like a killer, chasing some poor damsel in the evening. Halloween, and this... No, this is just too good. We gotta save that one for later. Let's go to the lame Halloween story first. And then we'll go to the really, really good Halloween story after that. I see Goblin Slave and Red Pill Junkie are talking about some... horrific things there in the chat room. I'll just leave it at that. But this is probably the most terrifying thing that we've encountered thus far on this week's edition of the Graylian Report, and that is the 9 most hated Halloween treats.
All right, let's read this and see if I hate the most hated treats.
Are you ready for the most hated Halloween treats? Are you prepared? Can you handle this? Okay, here we go. The 9 most horrific Halloween treats. The first one is candy corn.
Not a favorite of mine, but...
Rated on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being the best.
I'll give it a 5 because it's specifically a seasonal candy.
So you actually think it's among the best candies?
This time of year... Is this article saying 9 worst Halloween treats?
The title of the article, Tyler, is the 9 most hated Halloween treats.
No, I would disagree. I'd say that's one of the most loved because you can only get candy corn during Halloween.
Rate it on a scale.
I already did 5.
So you still give it a 5.
Yes, though I had made a foolish purchasing choice and bought a pack of Starburst candy corn thinking that they would taste like... I don't know what I was thinking, but they... I hated that pretty good. It was like Starburst flavored candy corn. Terrible.
All right then. Hold on. Hold on. We have to interject something. There's something missing here. Okay, I got it. Here we go. Ready? All right. There we go. Okay. Now, where were we? No. Not that one. That one. There we go. Okay. The really creepy stuff. Okay. Number 2. Mary Jane's. Horrible Halloween...
I don't know what the hell Mary Jane is.
You know, there's like those little kind of...
Is that like that old person licorice food?
Okay, they're orange and black. They either come in an orange or a black wrapper. You remember?
Oh, yeah.
The mystery chews are kind of like peanut buttery,
the
but
hell
not...
with that.
Okay.
I will rate that as a 2 because I want to... reserve the number 1 spot for something if it approaches.
Yeah. Wait and save it. Save the number 1. There'll be a good one that comes along eventually. Okay. All right. Ready? Number 3. Bitto honey. Do you remember the Bitto honey?
I do. If I got that during Halloween, yeah, I'm not going to be eating it. 3, because sometimes you just want a bit of honey.
This one's not on the list, but Tyler, I wondered what you think about Werther's Originals.
I knew you would.
I'm sorry, that was...
Come on over here. I'll give you a Werther's Original.
Okay. Are you ready? Tootsie Rolls.
All right. These are interesting because I don't like Tootsie Rolls. I like them slightly better as they increase in size.
Yeah, the big
ones. But I
ones
like
are...
the long and skinnies. I don't like the big fat chew of it. But if you have the flavored Tootsie Rolls, that goes from a... That's pushing a 1 right there. That goes from a 2 to a... It can be as high as a 5. Some of those flavored Tootsie Rolls are the best treats you'll get. Because if you're eating a very acidic or abrasive candy, that flavored Tootsie Roll is like a neutralizer with the base in it. Delicious.
Halloween candy analysis with Tyler Pittman, the Goblin King. I think you should be the Goblin King. Listen to
the
you.
The Goblin King is David Bowie.
I've never heard a guy who could analyze and dissect candy quite like you. Okay, ready. Number 5. Good and Plenty.
Pardon me. That's a 1.
They look like something that you'd like hand to a person in a mental ward.
Yeah, they look like... They look like placebos or something. I mean, hell with Good and Plenty. That stuff should be...
You can take the white pill or the red pill.
That's an illicit substance in my...
I only offer you the truth. A stomachache.
Does anyone like Good and Plenty?
No, I don't think so. Let's put it out in the chat room.
I feel like that's a product that's produced simply to use as a tax write-off at the end of the year because the sales are horrible, I'm sure.
I'm seeing a few people in here. Let's see. Let's see. What are the people in the chat room saying here? Candy corn, Geodice says, with many exclamations, seems to like that. Graham, I should have worn that UFO Congress. Oh, the UFO Congress. That reminds me. You know what the gift was, Tyler, that I brought back from Paradigm Symposium for my dear friend, Maureen Ellsbury at Open Minds?
A intergalactic diaphragm?
No, it was a used Speedo that used to belong to Robert Bavall.
Yes, I heard.
Well, she really wanted one. She really wanted one. But here's the thing. I'm kind of debating whether I'll give it to her now, and here's why.
But, you have it?
Well, yeah, and here's the thing. I was thinking, God, you know, if I just wore my regular street clothes but put that over my head, I could go as a Robert Bavall fan for Halloween. Huh? Yeah? Yeah? Right? Huh? Got it? Okay. Maureen would really be, like, mortified, though. I think she really wants that Speedo. Okay. Number 6. Smarties.
That's a plus. And, well, that's going to be on the medium to higher end. Though, I must say, the sweet tart version of Smarties are really great.
Let's phrase this in Halloween talk. Can you say sugar? Uber sweet but slightly sour? Which is food? And something that would probably dissolve
which
bones.
Is food.
Yes, but which would dissolve bones more quickly than lime.
Exactly why people hate it after they lose their teeth.
Okay, you ready? Here comes number 7. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
Whoppers.
I've actually ran into my own disappointment recently with a bag of Halloween candy a relative purchased, and I'm not a huge chocolate person anyway.
But Tyler, remember the number one selling Halloween candy this year is supposed to be chocolate.
Right, but I think that's because, and I'm going to keep it gender neutral, I think that's because a lot of people like chocolate anyway, and so Halloween, it's a great excuse to purchase a big bulk of it and keep it in the office.
I'm not sure I like where you're going with this, Tyler. God, look at how many people are in the chat room. They all want to hear all about Halloween candy. Can you believe this? Well, you're going to be really disappointed when you hear number 8. This one's really scary. Things that aren't candy.
As we discussed Sunday, sometimes the non-candy items in your Halloween bag can be the best.
Like until you bite into one of those apples that's got a razor, some psycho put in there.
Yeah, the hell with an apple. That's kind of like, you know, trick or treat. That's kind of your trick ammo.
All right, number 9. You ready? Number 9. Things that aren't even edible. What the?
This person's lazy, like I said.
This isn't even like a... And then there isn't even a number 10! Wait, the article said 9. Okay.
All right.
Wait. Whoa. You ready? I figured it out. Here's why. This is a Huffington Post article, Tyler.
Oh, yes. They forget that we do things on a scale of 10.
Yeah. Think about that while you're rolling over in your grave. Anyway, yeah. That wasn't as cool as I thought it would be. I mean...
Yeah, that was pretty weak.
Yeah, I mean, like, the candy I wouldn't want are, like, those little generic mints, you know, that they give you from time to time.
Yeah, the,
not the peppermints, but, like...
I know, the pillow mints.
Yeah.
Sometimes those are good, but not for Halloween.
When are they good?
Like, when you're at your...
When are those ever good?
When you travel back in time to that time where you pulled them out of your grandparents' candy dish and you're like, sweets without getting in trouble.
You know what I always kind of liked, though, for Halloween were actually, they're the little, the cinnamon and the butterscotch little roundies, you know?
roundies? That sounds like some old...
That's not what they're really called, but, you know, they're little round. They're little...
Can I have some little roundies?
The folks in the chat room would know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know. And they're a company.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
Golden and red wrappers.
Look at some of the people in the chat room tonight here. Okay, the hoboter was in there a few minutes ago. Now I'm seeing a guy called Lloydo McDon. Lloydo! Goodness gracious. The cast of characters that appear in the chat room here at Graylian Report. Man, this is a good time. Hello, Don. Okay, Tyler. I got another one here for you. The scariest Halloween urban legends. These are good. I think everyone likes to hear a good, scary story. And around this time of the year, the good, scary stories kind of start making the rounds, if you will, okay? They do. They start kind of making the rounds. And around 1991, one of those kind of stories made its way That was even before the blog sphere. How did urban legends get around before we had the internet? It's almost unfathomable.
Party lines,
yeah, yeah. Chain letters. You know, there were chain letters back before there was email. I remember a few of those being sent to my mom back in the day with good, just bizarre jokes and things like that. Why do you think I'm the way I am? But back around 1991, there was this really strange story that began to circulate out of Las Vegas. Now, when I think about Las Vegas, I think about the city that never sleeps, Sin City as it is, Robert Bigelow, all these kind of things.
Pimps and prostitutes.
And it's all legal, all rich and ripe for the taking, little buddy. Well, it was right there in Las Vegas in 1991 when a couple first checked into a hotel to spend the evening. And in spite of a grotesque odor that filled the room, they unpacked their bags and they began settling down for the night. Well, after many failed attempts to sleep, the pair finally had to call the front desk and complain about the odor, the odoriferous stench that seemed to be emanating from someplace in the room. Upon inspection, hotel staff, who had been summoned to the room, found the rotting remains of a woman inside the box springs of the mattress that the very couple had been sleeping on that same night.
God.
Now, like many folk tales and urban legends, this story gained currency and a reputation for, well, having changed details, locations, and characters. Now, unbelievably, dead bodies are stashed in mattresses, and much more often than you might think. In fact, the discovery of bodies is more often than not due to the smell of decaying flesh, just like this kind of a story would entail, days after a life may have been taken, and generally only when a new tenant arrives. This particular urban legend is, in fact, full of truths. In fact, this has happened so many times that the chances are that you or someone you know may have been the innocent bystander in a room where a stashed corpse had been placed in one such mattress, and you never even knew it. Doesn't that make you want to stay in that little roadside hotel, Tyler, the one that we always go to that special time of the year, each time we head down to sunny Florida? That doesn't really happen, but, you know, it added to the story a little. Now, in 2003, Tyler, this one emanates from the home of our friends, the KGRA, Kansas City. Mm-hmm. It was in a motel in Kansas City in 2003 that a man complained to the hotel management of a raunchy smell in his room. Starting to see a pattern here. Well, after being told nothing could be done to remedy the odor, the man stayed 3 days before checking out of the room because he couldn't stomach the awful odor he kept smelling.
It took the dude 3 days.
3 days to realize what housekeeping finally discovered when they arrived the following day. A man's remains beneath the mattress in a state of advanced decomposition.
Oh, yeah, housekeeping just happens upon the dead body. Who knows how long it's been there after, well, the man's been there for 3 days.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of creepy to think that this actually happens fairly frequently. I don't know how I feel about staying in hotels anymore. I have to say, our experience at the Kelly Best Western while we were up there at the Paradigm Symposium, that was really nice. The hotel room smelled really good. Oh, wait. Wait, there was this peculiar odor. Yeah, there was. There was this peculiar odor in the room. But you know what it was? It was like rose and saffron and cinnamon and lilac. No doubt. From the tinctures being sprayed by my roommate, Gary Evans.
Sounds like my mother-in-law.
He's actually very delightful smelling. So yes, there was a powerful odor, but it was a good odor, emanating from the room next door where Gary was staying. But Tyler, you know, in another case that happened, going back to 1999... This one took place in Atlantic City. Meet me tonight in Atlantic City. Well, someone did and never came back to see another day.
So this was meat spelled M-E-A-T?
Yes. 64-year-old, well, I don't have his name here, but there was a 64-year-old man, we'll call him Clarence, found beneath the bed in room 112 of a Motor Inn in Atlantic City, New Jersey. When a couple complained about the foul smell A search of the room was conducted and the remains were uncovered. The couple had spent the previous night on top of the dead man's corpse. Allegedly, there have been numerous other cases of similar episodes. 11 in total are listed on only one website, probably Snopes. None of the stories found matched the original urban legend precisely, but all were eerily similar. And the moral to this story is, well, bodies do end up after some time or after a few days of decomposition. For some reason, they materialize under mattresses in roadside hotels. So if you smell something horrible in your hotel room, you might want to look under that mattress. Because unbeknownst to anyone, including hotel staff or the killers next door, somehow that body found its way under the mattress that your ass is going to be laying on tonight. For those of you who take the Greylian with you on the road, before you check into that hotel, consider stopping at the Waffle House a few blocks on down the street. Get a coffee and drive a little further. You know, Tyler, another similar urban legend that I've found has many varieties. Actually emanates from right here in Asheville. Do you remember years and years and years ago, you and I went on a ghost hunt to a popular haunted location here in town called Helen's Bridge?
How could I forget?
We even got some photos of some strange things while we were up there. Well, it's funny because...
Do you remember that other time we were up there taking photos and the power went out?
Oh, that was at Grove Park.
Oh, what?
Remember the woman came out and said, "You guys like chocolate strawberries?" Yeah.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, so we sat there and we talked to her in a dark, haunted, old, huge hotel eating chocolate-dipped strawberries with this little foreign woman. That was an interesting story, too. You remember what she told us? Do you remember?
She said, "Wash your hands before you dig in."
Oh, here's what she said. She told us that she was with a business group coming up from Texas for the weekend. Well, she was staying in a room called 543. Now, you got to keep in mind, odd-numbered rooms are on one side of what's known as the Great Hall, and then even on the opposite side. So 543 was right next door to a room numbered 545. Well, we, Tyler, his girlfriend at the time, and myself had gone to take photographs of the historic Grove Park Inn. And there we were, taking photographs when suddenly all the lights went out. And there we were standing in complete and utter darkness at the Grove Park Inn. You could even hear in the background the sound of Tyler typing on his computer. Well,
that wasn't me.
So as we're standing there, this woman comes out of her hotel room. She had a foreign accent, but she was with the group from Texas, and she says, "Oh, you guys look like ghost hunters. Well, I have a story for you. Do you like chocolate-dipped strawberries?" And so we said, "Strawberries, of course."
Nothing better than a strawberry.
So we sat down, Tyler and his girlfriend, who will remain unnamed, even though her name is the same as his wife right now. Coincidence? Perhaps. We sat down and we began to talk with the woman. And usually how this goes, someone is intrigued when they see us walking around with cameras or something like that. I'll admit, we don't ghost hunt anymore.
Yeah, I was in high school at the time.
We were much younger, yes. This was years ago.
This was before some really bizarre stuff happened to me that had me step away for a few years.
Yeah. You quit looking for those things that went bump in the night because you found them.
They found me.
They found you. So we're sitting there talking with this gal. And she says, "Well, guys, I have a ghost story for you." And here's the story she told. Now, she and her group were up from Texas. And they had gone down to the old Asheville Rifle and Pistol Club, which is actually a part of the Grove Park property today. And that morning at breakfast, her friend Paul, who'd been staying in the room adjacent to hers, 545, he showed up. He was unshaven, circles under his eyes. Obviously hadn't rested well the night before. "Paul," his associates asked him, "Paul, what happened? What is wrong?" Well, Paul proceeds to tell a very curious story. Now, as we relate the story for you here that Paul told, just keep in mind, Paul had never visited Grove Park Inn before, nor had any of his accomplices or the woman, in fact, who told Tyler and I this story. But what we do know is that there is a rich history of haunting that occurred at Grove Park Inn, involving a specter known as the Pink Lady. There at the breakfast table, Paul began to tell what had happened the night before, the ordeal he had gone through. He awoke shortly before 3 o'clock in the morning, and he was having difficulty breathing. He literally began to feel like there was someone or something sitting on his chest, keeping him from being able to breathe. Well, as he's lying there, he opens his eyes and he says, "The first thing I see, it looks like pink ruffles. Ruffles of some sort." And I look up into the glaring eyes of a woman who is sitting, not on the bed, but who is sitting on my chest. She's wearing a very outdated looking dress. She had long, wispy gray hair, a gaunt appearance, and she stared down into my eyes. At first, of course, I thought, this is no ghost, this is a person sitting on my chest. This is a crazy person who's broken into my room, and I panicked. What do I do? And just as I begin to try and move, or to try and shove her off into the floor so that I can dash out of the room and get out of there, she begins to vanish. And as she begins to vanish, the sensation of the person sitting on my chest lessens and also vanishes. Well, Paul didn't know what to make of this entire story. And as the woman sat there telling this to Tyler and I, we were just flummoxed, thinking, my gosh, this is an almost archetypal retelling of the story of the Pink Lady. You know, I was contacted recently by a friend of ours, Tyler, Nick Tipton. You remember him?
I do.
Nick emailed me, and I haven't written him back yet because I've been so busy the last few days, but he wrote to tell me he is now engaged. Nick, if you're listening...
Congratulations.
Yes, congratulations if you're listening out there, Nick. But Nick told a similar story. Now, during one of our weekend excursions at Grove Park, Nick had stayed in that room. And at the time, his girlfriend had been accused of tickling his feet. He asked her, "I couldn't sleep. You kept tickling my feet last night. It's not funny." Of course, his girlfriend denied ever tickling his feet. Later, we'd find a number of people who had stayed in the room also claimed that this ghost would tickle their feet. So who knows what's actually going on there. But the stories at Grove Park Inn have lingered and lasted, and of course, we've remained fascinated with them ever since. We're going to have to go pay the bills for the time being, but when we come back, we'll be continuing our special Halloween extravaganza here on the Graylian Report. Who knows what other kinds of creepy stories Tyler and I can cook up. Gosh, we could probably do this all night. In fact, we've got more than an hour left. So grab onto something and hang on, my friends. We'll continue this creepy rendition of the Graylian Report when we return, right after this.
Carl Sagan once wrote that the questioning mind needs to be instilled with both skepticism and wonder, for the universe is a pretty big place, filled with undelved mysteries, sciences, and life that we've barely begun to comprehend. Every month, Intrepid Magazine brings you both the wondrous and the skeptical. Intrepid Magazine focuses on science, metaphysics, UFOs, politics, conspiracies, and unexplained phenomena, all offered up by Intrepid's cadre of writers and contributors, comprised of a host of seasoned authors, pundits, and recognized names in their fields. The universe is indeed a big place, and where other magazines leave off, Intrepid Mag is just beginning. Subscribe to Intrepid Magazine today at www.intrepidmag.com. That's www.intrepidmag.com.
Thank you.
Once you pass Witherspoon's barn, you keep walking on down that old country road a little further. Just a little further on down that road. You'll see an old graveyard on the left, but that's not what you need to worry about. As you're going down that road, make haste as you cross that bridge. Because it's right there at that old bridge where so many have said that a thing, something that lurks under that bridge will come after you. It's worse than Ichabod Crane. It's worse than Freddy Krueger or any of the bogeymen of the silver screen or the printed page. Make great haste as you pass that bridge, and God speed to you. I hope you make it home. And you found your home, of course, for the creepy. This week's edition of the Graylian Report, a special Halloween edition of the program. I have to admit that Tyler and I are completely ad-libbing all of this. We didn't script this. We're just going with it. When you're really in your element, ad-libbing is an easy thing to do, and we are absolutely in our element anytime it is Halloween. No, actually, yeah, Tyler actually hand-selected all these stories from Goosebumps novels. Not really. Okay. When we were during the break, there are a number of other stories that we have on hand, but Tyler, you specifically had a request for a certain kind of story. What was it that you wanted to hear?
I've always thought the creepiest tales were the ones that dealt with Ouija.
Ouija boards?
Will you work for me?
Okay.
Witch boards, boy.
I know a couple of Ouija board stories. Now, I'll tell you this. My father called me today, and he was so happy to hear that there's a little bookstore off Merriman Avenue here in town called Accent on Books, and he'd gone in there to pick up a book he ordered, and he saw copies of my book, Reynolds Mansion, An Invitation to the Past, on display in the Halloween section there at the store, and he went running over to the guy, because he knows the fellow who owns the store, and he says, "Hey, did you know that's my son's book?" And so they're selling these books there. But here's the thing about that book is, if you've read Reynolds Mansion, An Invitation to the Past, if you've not, we've got it in the Graylian bookstore there on the Graylian Report site. The book is actually more of a historic kind of a book. It really actually documents the history of the Reynolds Mansion. But it's kind of an experiment. At the end of the book, there's this experiment that we did. Lisa Northrup and Chris Hayes and Matt Oakley, of course, of Graylian Hall of Fame. And by the way, yes, people in the chat room, yeah, we are actually playing the piano live. It's not me, it's Tyler playing the piano, but this is live music that we're adding to the program here. So. But we actually conducted what Dr. Andrew Nichols, the parapsychologist, would call a psychic session. In doing so, it's very interesting because Shane Prue, one of our listeners, actually mailed me a Ouija board. Okay? He mailed me a Ouija board. And what we did was we used that Ouija board in the psychic session at the Reynolds Mansion, which was the kind of the climax of the story and the very end. And I tell you, it was kind of interesting what happened. But that's not the Ouija story I'm going to tell. As a matter of fact, we'll wait until we get back from this break. I've got a Ouija tale that will probably curl your toes. It'll cause your hair to drop out. It'll cause your eyeballs to shrivel up and your skin to go gray. Then you'll look like a zombie, like those of us down here in the Hollow Earth. I'm Micah Hanks. It is the Graylian Report. Stay with us. We'll be back right after this.
August 15th, my joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
September 3rd, I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th, I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
In this article, this fella makes the case that UFO believers are all airheads, but the entire thing's based on the misunderstanding of what the term UFO means in the first place.
This is Micah Hanks.
I couldn't tell you if alien abductions actually occur. I couldn't tell you if UFOs are actually responsible for cattle mutilations. But as long as the media can treat this like a circus, these subjects will never be addressed in a serious forum.
The Micah Hanks radio program.
When are people going to wake up?
On the Global Radio Alliance.
I'm telling you. The answers are out there, but you got to know the right place to look. And you have to present the information that you find in a credible, consistent manner.
Sundays at 8 p.m. Eastern, only on the Global Radio Alliance.
Welcome to your home for weird news, anomalies, exopolitics, and all things that go bump in the night. It's the Graylian Report with Micah Hanks.
Is the Graylian Report. The unusual, weird news, anomalies, exopolitics. It's beyond the fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Graylian Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
Broadcasting from the darkest corner of the web, our special Halloween edition of the Graylian Report. I'm Micah Hanks, your host with the ghost, keeping you company every Tuesday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, along with Tyler Pittman, the producer of the program, and the man who helps keep this psycho within the confines of sanity on a weekly basis. We also broadcast Sunday nights on a program exclusive to our friends in Kansas City, the Global Radio Alliance. That's KGRARadio.com. And if you don't listen, be sure and make that a weekly stop, just like you've made the Graylian Report. And then a final announcement. Today, I just must be a glutton for punishment. I can't get enough. And this is another thing that my friends at Open Minds were emailing me about today. Maureen Ellsbury had said, "I hear you're doing another radio show. You must be crazy." And it's true. In addition to the Tuesday Graylian Report, now, if you tune in at 11 a.m. Eastern, I don't know how many of you ghouls and goblins out there are awake that early in the day, but at 11 a.m. Eastern, there's an additional program that I'm featuring called Middle Theory, which is more current events and news. That way we can keep the Graylian Report ghoulish. We put all of our timely topics there on the Middle Theory program. But just check out MiddleTheory.com, the first podcast, which will be available within just a few short days on iTunes. That's all going to be available at MiddleTheory.com. Check out MiddleTheory.com. That's co-hosted with a good friend of the program, Mr. McNonymous himself, Christopher McCollum of New York. He joins us live each week via the Big Apple. Looking forward to adding that to the weekly roster. Look at that. Three programs. One radio and two podcasts. Who knows what else awaits us in the future. But if Tyler and I have anything to do with it, there will be much, much more ahead, my friends.
Let's consult the witch board.
Well, you know, yeah. Freddy in space. Okay. Sorry, I'm looking at the chat room. I tend to get distracted by what's in the chat room, you know, Tyler. Now, when I was in the Twin Cities, I had the privilege and the pleasure of being able to spend several hours catching up with the fourth Graylian. Actually, he's probably like the third Graylian, but I mean, there are like seven or eight of us really all together. And then you and I, who are actually able to commit to the studio time each week. Red Pill Junkie and I had that rare opportunity to talk ufology. I think RPJ is going to be helping with the new UFO book, the next UFO book, which really, even though the UFO Singularity was the last one that was a major publisher, and then we, our in-house printing press, Rocketeer Press, put out the Ghost Rockets. This is actually going to be more a sequel to the UFO Singularity. But I think RPJ is going to be helping out with that. I'm really excited to be working with him more. And it was really great just being able to hang out with he and Graham from Grimerica. And actually, the night before that, Graham and RPJ actually participated in the live broadcasts of the Micah Hanks program in Intrepid Radio. Graham actually co-hosted along with Chase Kletsky on the Micah Hanks program, and then RPJ jumped on as a guest during Intrepid Radio. So it was really cool getting to hang out with our Graylian brothers, and there's some hilarious photographs of Graham and RPJ and I together in the hotel restaurant. RPJ, however, in the chat room right now is saying, Micah, I thought you didn't mess around with Ouija boards. That's true. That's true. Now, for the purposes of the psychic experiment that is espoused in the Reynolds Mansion book, I'm sorry, I'm looking at what Miss Eccentric just wrote in the chat room. Color me intrigued. But anyway.
Got a pair in the drawer, courtesy of Mr. Bival. What are you waiting for?
Yeah. Oh, Robert Bival. He was one of the absolute highlights of the Paradigm Symposium, meeting him. He came up to me the morning after our live broadcast, the final morning there. He and his wife were flying out, and he came up to me and says, Mike, I have to tell you, I was very impressed with your ability, your radio broadcasting. You're very good. You're a professional at that. You do it very well. And he'd been standing right there when we took the airwaves. So that's a story you're probably going to have to hear about for hundreds and hundreds of years. Because once we all eventually embrace our transhumanism destiny, I guess we're all going to live for another hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. But that said, I think we have to actually go to a quick word from our sponsors, Tyler.
Are you looking for something creepy this Halloween?
I will need fangs for my vampire costume.
Well, you're in luck, because we've got fangs.
Looking for wraps for my mummy suit.
You won't be using toilet paper this year, Ramses.
I am Boris, and I need something weird.
Well, if you want weird, we've got it. What kind of a weird are you looking for?
I don't know, a dildo or something.
Okay, that's just a little too weird.
What about spandex or anything rubber?
The adult entertainment store is only two shops down. Next, please.
What about an antenna or a strap-on device? Perhaps some kind of cod piece?
Well, you're in luck. We've got equipment extensions even for the little guys.
What about a costume for me?
Sorry, Bigfoot. A pelt like yours is going to help me make 12 costumes. And someone please call the National Enquirer.
Hi, everyone. This is Satan. Each year I bring my business exclusively to the Halloween Hell House. You should, too. If you don't, I'll be happy to turn your soul for all eternity over Hell's rotisserie.
Mention you heard about us on this station and receive a free collectible Rosemary's Baby bottled fetus. Halloween Hell House, 666 Elm Street. Ready to help make your Halloween nightmares a living hell.
You got to pay the bills, right?
I love that place too. Not just because they pay the bills.
Yeah. There's a lot of other extracurricular activities that take place down there at the Halloween
Hell House. Yeah, that mummy smelt like a really old wet cast.
He smelt like the inside of that hotel room that you and I stayed in off of Highway Number 8 a few weeks ago. You remember that? What was that all about?
That was after a few sleepless nights. The scratching really gets to me.
The scratching got to you?
Oh, my gosh.
That's another cool guy that we got to hang out with a bit in Minneapolis was Laird Scranton. And he and his wife, Risa, I mean, I have to say that in addition to being a great speaker, he and his wife are just some of the coolest people to hang out with. But Laird, we had some interesting late-night conversations, I have to say, so... In keeping with the Halloween spirit, I'll just leave it at that. They
start out like this. Bored, lonely, I need you to go...
I don't think I can... No, Tyler. But anyway, speaking of bored, we'll go in that direction because the question was, do we have a good Ouija board story? And as it turns out, I actually do. Now, this one... actually was not my own personal experience. This is something that was related to me many, many years ago by a friend. And the story goes like this. Chris and his girlfriend at the time, Jessie, didn't feel like going to the movies that night. Chris and Jessie were looking for something different to do. Well, they weren't into smoking out or drinking. But Chris had another idea. He just bought a Parker Brothers Ouija board. I'm sorry, nothing says terror like Parker Brothers, right?
Especially the glow-in-the-dark ones.
The glow-in-the-dark Parker Brothers Ouija board. Okay, anyway.
I don't know. I've always been wary of witch boards, and the stories just creep me out. You hear a lot of weird tales dealing with that.
Yeah, man. I mean, not just tales, other body parts of little creatures from the forest. But listen, this is a true story. Okay, so picking right up there. So anyway. Now, Jessie wasn't really comfortable with the idea, but Chris talked her into it. And shortly after 9 o'clock, they locked themselves in his room. They placed the planchette on the board, and they each put their hands on the planchette and began to ask questions, as is the tradition with what is known as the Ouija board. The first question was asked by Chris. It was a simple question: is there anyone here? Immediately, Chris and Jessie began to get a response. It said yes. And they watched as the planchette drifted across the board and up to the yes marker. What is your name? It began to spell out a name. A. Drifting more slowly this time, but it goes over to L. The letter I. C. Alice. It looks like Alice. Where are you? No answer. What are you? No answer. But then, all of a sudden, Alice begins to relate, in a fragmented way, her story. She begins to tell Chris and Jessie that, well, she passed away sometime in the 1800s from consumption. She died. Now, this wasn't particularly disturbing, if you believe in spirits or not. The story here was that Alice had been someone who passed away in the 1800s. Many people during that period actually passed away from diseases and the like, consumption, or the colic, as they may have called it back in those days. But this is where it gets really strange. At this point, in addition to saying that she had died as a child, Alice then told Chris and Jessie that she was waiting to be reborn, and that one day Chris and Jessie themselves would get married and that they would have children, and that when their child, their firstborn, came along, that Alice hoped to be reborn into Chris and Jessie's child. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, people, this, I'm telling you, take it or leave it, but this is not an urban legend. This is not the imaginings of your favorite Graylian. This is a story that was actually told to me years ago by a dear friend of mine. He lives in the state of Texas now, and his name actually is Chris, but I can't give you any more information about him. And this story is, to the best of my ability to recall, exactly how he told it to me. I've changed the name of his girlfriend, because I don't know that she was entirely comfortable with what happened next. But again, this is exactly as the story was told to me by the two of them. Now, at this point, I think both Chris and Jessie were a little weirded out by what Alice had told them. Reborn. Reborn into the body of our firstborn. Chris had become skeptical, and so Chris decided to ask Alice more questions. He goes on to ask Alice, "How did you die again?" Alice wouldn't respond. He asks Alice, once again, "Where are you?" The planchette begins to move across the board and follows the sequence of letters H, E. It resides on L and sits there and doesn't move. H-E-L. Chris asks, "Why are you in hell?" The planchet moves again to the letter I, where it waits, and then it moves slowly to K, I, and then back to the letter L, where again it resides. I kill. The final question of the night was also asked by Chris. He asked, Alice, what are you? As the planchet again began to move seemingly by itself, the letters D, E, M, O were spelled out. And at that point, Chris moved the planchet as quickly as he could up to the goodbye. And he told me, after that, I never, ever touched another Ouija board. Now, I couldn't tell you whether that's a true story or not. I know, again, and people, all sensationalism aside, that is an actual story that was told to me. I find that story far scarier than anything I've heard on Coast to Coast AM, far scarier than I've read in many of the books that deal with Ouija boards. For all we know, maybe what's actually happening there is something that stems from purely within the mind, and maybe Chris and Jesse were just creating that creepy experience for themselves that night. Who knows what was actually happening? A few of you may remember that story because it was detailed in my book, The Magic Mysticism of the Molecule book that came out a few years ago, and I did talk about that in a chapter that touches briefly on Ouija boards. But the truth is that that is the story that was told to me by my friend Chris, and which, again, to this day, he maintains had actually happened. And he recalls it as one of the most terrifying things that ever happened in his life. And that, my friends, is why I don't play with Ouija boards. But I'll leave you with one more. And this one strikes even a little closer to home before we go to break. Now, years ago, my mother and her neighbor, Nancy, just like a lot of bored teenagers, just like Chris and Jesse did years and years ago, my own mother decided to experiment with Ouija boards. And on the night in question, my mother and Nancy began asking the Ouija board questions. It was just the two of them. Their fingers were placed firmly on the planchet. And just like in Chris and Jesse's story, they said that the object began to move around the board. It took on a life of its own, and it began to very quickly move from character to character and tell the story of a young man named Ralph. And Ralph told them how he died. Ralph told my mother and Nancy that he had been driving in a convertible, a 1957 Chevy, and that when it flipped over a bridge, it landed top down in a creek and pinned Ralph underneath it, and that Ralph had actually died as a result of this accident, and that Ralph was coming back through the Ouija board and telling this story to my mother and Nancy Hensley. My mother was so terrified by that experiment that she never, ever, ever touched a Ouija board ever again. And she told me, and I maintain to this day, I don't really have any particular affinity or fear for Ouija boards. We used one in the experiment at Reynolds Mansion, but aside from that, no, I've never, ever messed with Ouija boards. And I maintain that, well, maybe if not an actual gateway to the spirit realm, there's something as yet unexplained that takes place with those things, and it's not exactly something that maybe we're entirely comfortable with.
There should be more scientific studies of it.
I think so.
I don't think there has been, and maybe there's time is now.
The time is for the break, Tyler. We'll come back right after this.
It was just a dream. Oh man, gross.
Does your teenage son suffer from late-night prepubescent wetness episodes? Or even worse, do you find his sheets and underwear stuffed into the bottom of the trash can without any reasonable explanation as to why? Denial is sometimes nature's way of crying for help. If things didn't change, there would be no butterflies. But sometimes this alone won't be enough to help your growing boy feel secure about the changes taking place in his body. That's why we're proud to introduce the all-new electrokinetic Sleep Shocker Dream Monitoring System from Boris Technologies. This patented The device administers a small electric shock to the male genitals at the first detection of theta-induced dream humping, helping to keep your sheets dry and your night's rest peaceful. Won't you rest better, knowing you'll wake up to a clean, dry bed? And if you call today, we'll even throw in our patented Dream Diaper. Just put on the Dream Diaper before you go to sleep at night, and we'll take care of the rest. Just because your dreams are damp doesn't mean you have to wake up feeling soggy. The Electrokinetic Sleep Shocker Dream Monitoring System from Boris Technologies. Rest assured, you'll sleep better. Consult your doctor before using. If genital irritation, swelling, loss of sex drive, dryness of mouth, muscle soreness, loss of appetite, hair loss, appearance of male breast or man boobs, irritable bowel syndrome, loss of bladder control, sporadic vomiting, clinical depression, psychotic episodes, swelling of the brain, bulging of eyes, or bleeding of the gums occurs, contact your doctor immediately. Not legal in all 50 states. Void where prohibited.
Ranger Station.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting in the forest.
Uh-huh.
1 second I'm having a smoke. Next thing I know, I'm face-to-face with Smokey Bear.
Wow.
And he told me it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
Did you know 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans?
I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous and you're not. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Back to the program. It's alive. It is the Graylian Report, and we're live. Look at this. People in the chat room, best episode ever. We're having a little fun this week with the Halloween edition of the Graylian Report. I thought we should really do something absolutely fun, out the window, wild, and unscripted. And that's exactly what you're getting this week, folks. And sometimes I think the unscripted episodes are actually better than the ones that we put all kinds of planning into.
Yeah, we get to just be regular old slaves for a change.
What? What?
Quite an experience to live in fear, isn't it? That's what it is to be a slave.
Now, that's not a horror film, but there's your slave quote right there from Blade Runner. I love that one, man. We talked about Blade Runner a few weeks ago. I tell you, though, it's not a horror film. It's certainly a suspenseful kind of an action film. But, dude, there are a couple of scenes in that movie. They just will blow your mind. And the one that really sticks with me, I'll try and be brief because we actually need to move pretty quickly. We've got a whole series of Halloween horror films that we want to go through here. But the scene that kills me in that film is where Rutger Hauer goes up to see the guy. Okay. He goes up to see the doctor. And the doctor, you remember this? He looks kind of like Art Bell. We've talked about this before recently.
We have.
And he's talking with a man, and he basically asks the doctor, his creator. He's talking with the God that created him, if you will. And Rutger Hauer asks if he can have his life extended. And the character, the doctor, says no. And at that moment, Rutger Hauer kisses him on the mouth and then kills him with his two hands. And it's one of the most absolutely terrifying sequences in cinema that I've ever seen. But by the same token, it's also strangely, horrifically beautiful. That entire film is strangely, horrifically beautiful. It's just a really, really unique film. So that's one of our favorite quotes from the film, "Ah, to be a slave." Indeed. Tyler. The first thing that comes to your mind, your favorite horror film of all time?
Well, the one that frightened me the most as a child and I still find unsettling is Poltergeist 3.
Poltergeist 3, yes, indeed. Now, you know, there's this kind of mythos associated with Poltergeist.
There is?
Yeah, which kind of asserts that there was a curse. A curse associated with Poltergeist. You remember that?
Yes.
No, seriously, that there was a curse. There were a lot of the actors that died during the making of those films. And it was really kind of creepy.
I do remember hearing some about that.
Yes, and back in town.
who is back in town. And some of the actors died during the making of the film. I mean, it was really, really, really creepy. But yeah, Poltergeist, those films were really strange. You know, I was telling you, it's been so many years where we've found it. By the way, people in the chat room are asking questions about Middle Theory. They want to know about the new program. Can you subscribe to it via iTunes? The first edition of Middle Theory was actually broadcast today, and the podcast will be available through iTunes. Right now, you can stream the podcast directly from the Middle Theory site by going to middletheory.com, and you'll see a post with a media player. You won't see the media player. You have to click on it, but there'll be the date and then the episode. Click on that, and you can stream the content directly from that post, but it will be available through iTunes probably within the next 2 or 3 days. So that's the status update on Middle Theory. That's where you can find that. And in the meantime, just check out middletheory.com and just click that first post there on the page, and that will actually grant you access to the audio. So anyway, yeah, Poltergeist, that is indeed a good one. You know, one I think that we, well, I'll tell you, very simply, one of my all-time favorite monster films, and actually it's an entire series of films, but they're all good. A lot of people just don't get Godzilla, but I have always loved Godzilla. I've always enjoyed those films, I mean, immensely. Giant monsters, you know, it's just a thing for me. As well as Frankenstein. You know, we came back with some audio of Victor Frankenstein screaming, it's alive, and now I know what it's like to be God. It's funny because my friend Laura is, right now, she's writing her first novel. And I went over and I had brunch with she and her husband on Sunday, and we hung out and we talked really in depth about the novel writing process. This coming from an expert novel writer that I am not. Of course, I've never written a novel, but I will. I will. I'll eventually write several. It's just a matter of getting around to it. But Laura and I, as we were talking about this, it's funny because Laura doesn't plan to write. I think the genre she's going for is kind of the young adult fiction. But it's funny because she's a beautiful, sweet, demure, kind-hearted person. But when I think of Laura, maybe it's just the Halloween, the essence of the moment coming out. But I think always when I think of Laura embarking on writing novels, I think about Mary Shelley and how Mary Shelley, Lord Byron, and all these characters are sitting around one night telling stories, and they decide that they want to write, see who can write the scariest story. And this is allegedly, according to the conventional interpretation of the story, this is where Frankenstein came from. You remember that? To think that one of the most unsettling stories of the horror genre of the last couple of centuries came from basically a dinner time discussion, a bunch of friends sitting around a table and saying, okay, let's see who can write the best story. And this young lady, I don't think she'd authored anything of significance before that, and she writes this novel that becomes a mainstay in the horror genre, Frankenstein.
Yeah, I remember reading about all of this, actually.
It's really kind of interesting. And it's, unfortunately, I have to say, caused there to be a lot of conspiracies that actually question whether Mary Shelley ever even wrote Frankenstein. I think that's absolutely absurd. Obviously, she did.
Those aren't conspiracies. They're alternate hypotheses.
Mm. Okay,
just like the Shakespeare stuff being written by Francis Bacon or whatever.
It's so silly. You know, for Shakespeare, ask Scotty Roberts whether or not Shakespeare actually wrote the plays that are attributed to him. You know, but again, it's not a horror film, but really Macbeth has its really highly creepy overtones. Did you ever see the Roman Polanski Macbeth film?
I haven't, but that is a great Halloween book because that has the double toil and trouble,
yeah.
Cauldron burn and fire bubble.
A lot of the archetypal elements of Halloween.
And the goat, yeah, it's a great... That's a great read.
It really is. So think about that. I mean, those are really unconventional additions to the Halloween roster. Macbeth, what was the other one we were just talking about there? Blade Runner, you know, again, not exactly what you'd consider a Halloween film, but think about it. If you watched Blade Runner, it would fit in almost with any Halloween lineup. I mean, it's a suspenseful film. And really, if you think about it, the creation of human-like superhumans in Blade Runner, how is that different from Mary Shelley's Frankenstein? I mean, it's really the same sort of concept.
Yeah, or the kind of thing we're seeing enter our very real everyday lives.
What are you talking about? Like with transhumanism?
Genetic engineering.
Yeah, well, anyway. Bringing the dead back to life. It's a creepy concept, isn't it, Tyler?
It is.
But what if we could do it? What if we could bring the dead back to life?
What is this place?
I brought you here to Barry Allen's cat.
Daddy, is church all right?
Why, Judd?
I have no reasons.
I dreamed he got hit by a car and you and Mr. Crandall buried him in the pet cemetery.
What did we do tonight, Judd?
What we did, Lois, was a secret.
May the Lord bless you and keep you.
Has anyone ever buried a person up there?
May the Lord make his face to shine upon you.
You're thinking thoughts that's not thought of.
Daddy's gonna do something really bad.
You're thinking of putting him up there. Don't deny the thought hasn't crossed your mind.
Come back to me, Gage. Come back to us.
Pictures presents Stephen King's all-time best-selling tale of horror. Pet Cemetery.
Tyler, you know, the only problem is they misspelled it. Did you notice?
Well, I read the book. The book's really good, too. But the film, I think, is a very well-done adaptation. I think the misspelling comes from the fact that the little sign for the pet cemetery was written by a child, and they spelled it with an S.
Yeah, of course. No, I know it was intentionally. Actually, you know, another Stephen King film that was not, I don't think the film was nearly as good as the book. You know, funny enough, the remake also had Rutger Hauer in it, I believe, of Blade Runner fame, but the film is Salem's Lot. The original, though, depicted the monster, the vampire, as being more like a Nosferatu kind of character.
Yeah, what was his name? Stoker? No. Something like that, though.
Yeah. There was the vampire, and then there was the guy who was like the caretaker, and then Ben Mears was the main character. But that was my favorite.
I read it. The movie was like made for TV. I think you loaned it to me.
Yeah, I used to have it on DVD.
In our early days.
It wasn't really a great film, unfortunately, but then they did a remake that was a lot more in keeping with the novel that was, again, also made for TV that had Rutger Hauer playing the vampire. But you remember the most iconic scene in that film was to me when Father Callahan, he holds up the cross and everything, and the vampire comes up and takes the cross and breaks it and everything, and then turns Callahan into an immortal vampire. Oh man, you're talking about an absolutely unsettling scene in a film. That one, boy, yeah. Okay, a mutual. This is one that I think that we both enjoyed as kids. Probably one of my favorite schlock films.
There is a passageway to the most evil place you can imagine. A gate behind which the demons wait to take back what was once theirs.
And the Hadals.
And now someone has opened the gate.
And this weird tearing sound there. The decomposed corpse of her dead father.
Oh no.
He's tearing out air by the hands.
I'm calling the police.
You got demons.
You got demons. That's like your favorite line ever, isn't it, Tyler? You've been bad!
They have opened the gate. Pray it's not too late.
You know, I think the thing that's the most fun about these sorts of films, Tyler, is the fact that as children watching these films, you know, you get these lines, you've been bad.
I know, we were discussing this. I'm a slave to many things, but amongst them are one-liners. Like, I can just picture myself saying it to Slaveling. You've been bad.
Yeah, just before you whip him and then make him bob in a toilet for refried meat that's been candied.
It's like the first Hellraiser where the dad is hooked up to the chains and he's like, come to daddy.
Yeah. Oh, you know, and that's the thing is I think that when you're a child, it's like these things, they hit you harder because it's as though those statements are actually being directed at children.
Well, they... I own this film, and it used to run a lot, I guess, on television when I was growing up.
Yeah, me too.
When I reviewed it as an adult, noticed that the kid with the satanic records and all this stuff is like a 9-year-old. I felt like a loser.
It's like, wow, man, I got a late start.
I'm like, dude, you know, they didn't have downloading back then, but this kid had some really good records, and he's 9.
Yeah. Okay, in the chat room, Red Pill Junkie is saying, among the favorite horror films of the Graylian listeners, he includes The Exorcist.
Yes, that goes without saying, I think.
We don't even have that on our list here. You know, ours isn't so much as a list as it is an amalgamation from the goblin realm, but yes, The Exorcist, yeah, it does go without saying. You know, my father's an Episcopal priest, and there's a fellowship hall adjacent to the church which had an office in it, which, when I launched my writing career, and I began not as a writer of the strange and the unusual, but also, get this, I began as a short horror fiction writer, and I was writing stories and trying to send them off to magazines. I never got a single fiction story published before I gave up and started writing for Fate magazine, and then shortly thereafter, I began my career as a writer of The Strange and Unusual.
They'll never know that In the Mouths of Badness isn't really my idea.
Yeah, but so there in the church office, I would write horror stories. And for inspiration, one night I was sitting there by myself in the office, and I had the laptop, and I decided to watch a film I'd never watched before, The Exorcist, in the office next to a church at night by myself in the dark. It didn't bother me that much, actually, funny enough. Goblin Slave, well, that's you, Dolores
yeah,
Claiborne.
You Goblin Slave.
Yeah. Let's see here. We've got the Omen series.
Yeah, that was... I think the creepiest part in The Omen was when the lady is like, Damien, this is for you, and hangs herself. That was pretty...
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Pretty wild.
Oh, yeah. That was pretty... Yeah, that was pretty... The Thing, yes. Both versions of The Thing, but the John Carpenter Thing is among the finest horror films ever committed to film ever. The John Carpenter Thing is incredible.
Yeah, the part where they're testing the blood...
Oh,
that gives
yeah.
It quite a scare, but it's a shame.
Man, we need to
Carpenter
have
brought some great movies, but then things like Ghosts of Mars
make
you kind of like, oh, man.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, I noticed that all the really good directors, as the advent of the digital age came upon us, they got worse and worse at what they did, with one exception, with one notable exception, and that was Ridley Scott. His films continue to absolutely...
Right. And yeah. I watched Prometheus recently.
What did you think?
I think it's... I don't know. We should discuss it after the show because there's a lot of themes in that movie that were kind of startling coming from Ridley Scott.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, we actually, Scotty and I, invited him to the first Paradigm Symposium. We put out an invitation. We said, would you like to meet Eric Von Daniken? Just come to the Paradigm Symposium. I'm telling you, man, that Prometheus is unsettling but incredible. I think it's a beautiful film.
And I went in expecting something completely different.
Yeah.
I thought that, you know, anyway, I'll put it like this. There was a scary part in it where the snake, and it's scary because it's so quick and how they do, it's just gruesome.
Yeah.
I mean, Scott can do that kind of thing.
Ridley is a fantastic director. He's really, really good. Nikki writes in the chat room, I prefer the movie of The Shining rather than the book. I agree. The book is kind of goofy. It's just another Stephen King, what would you call it? He has a template, okay? Every one of his main characters is a writer who's written a couple of novels and all this. Think about it. Ben Mears, the guy from The Dark Half, Jack in The Shining. I mean, seriously, every book he's ever written is not really every book he's ever written, but most of them, the main character's a novel. You're casting yourself as the main character. Ah!
I think the things in the book, but I had seen the film beforehand, all the allusions to like the animal mate in them. The animals in the maze didn't do anything for me.
That didn't do anything, but I'll say this, though, that, I mean, as a Kubrick film, I mean, it was great. I love Kubrick as a director. You know, as much as I love Ridley Scott as a director, and as much as I love H.P. Lovecraft as a writer, or as much as I love, you know, talk about a horror writer, but, you know, I'll say this, though. There's only one Kubrick film that just didn't do it for me, and that was not The Shining. It was A Clockwork Orange. That damned film just... I just don't see the attraction.
Well, Kubrick's films are slow-paced, which... To me,
that's fine. It's just that one just didn't do it. You know, I loved 2001.
I mean, I think my favorite, if I go back and look at them, The Shining is probably my favorite.
Yeah.
Dr. Strangelove is probably the most entertaining.
Yeah. Actually, I think my favorite is 2001, but for very different reasons. By the way, Red Pill Junkie includes Fright Night, the original. Oh, man.
The thing with that movie is I always saw the neighbor, or what's her name, Marcy from Married with Children.
Yeah.
So it was like I expected the Bundys or something to be downstairs.
Did you see the remake?
No.
It wasn't terrible, but I mean, it just didn't have the same campy feel of the original. You know, that's the thing I think that makes a lot of these older horror films fun is the camp factor. And,
definitely, which is kind of lost nowadays.
Yeah,
that's why I don't think horror movies are what they used to be.
Yeah, they don't have the camp factor. Unfortunately, the worst horror films made today are good enough to where you can't take them seriously. When you know that you can't take a film seriously and it's so campy that it's partly humor, like Evil Dead, you know, the latest Evil Dead I have not seen. Have you seen this?
I did. I thought it was good.
You know, Caleb
raved
about it. Yeah, but you remember Caleb was just raving about it.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
Yeah, we've got Black Christmas here that Nuvema, Nuvema.
And I think that's one that Troma is now putting out. Because if I recall, I actually own it, and I think Fiona Apple's dad is in it.
Yeah, Cosmos, by the way, also mentions Poltergeist. Let's see, a lot of people are saying the Poltergeist films are really good. Jaws, you know, yeah, I mean, I don't consider Jaws so much a horror film. I mean, I know it has to do with a monster, but I think that what makes a monster movie fun is the fact that, you know, you have a monster that shouldn't exist, you know? Now, Justin in the chat room is saying, let's see here, Prometheus was a wretched mess, a bigger disappointment than The Phantom Menace. Whoa! Justin, I don't know if we can compare the two. Prometheus was a good film, whether or not it was maybe up to the expectations, but I'll tell you this, The Phantom Menace all around, all those new horror, they might as well be horror films, all the new Star Wars films, good God.
Yeah, terrible. I think Prometheus, I kind of feel the same way.
So I kind of agree with Justin.
There were
actually
some things that I would have liked to see that I didn't, but I think at the end of the movie, the story that was trying to get across is it was done exactly the way it needed to, and I almost feel like the alien hybrid at the end, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, actually, you know what's funny is Justin actually brings up one more point, though. He says, I wanted them to be what they seemed to be, which was physically part of the ship, okay? And I agree with that. Yeah, that would have been interesting if in Prometheus, rather than just being these autonomous aliens, if in some way they actually were part of the ship. Okay,
I think that whole, and I'm just now kind of like getting this information and trying to process it, I think that's kind of almost a commentary on singularity that...
Totally.
They're never going to be just part of the ship, even though we strive, and, you know, that's looked at as the most ultimate achievement of man, immortality, because that thing was living for how many years?
Like, oh, God.
3,000 or something?
Yeah, something like that. It's really strange, so...
But they're the creators of man. They're not machines.
You know, I hope we don't have to go late, Tyler, but the beautiful thing about not being on a conventional radio... station or network with this program is that we make the rules. The hour is drawing nigh. That hour we call the witching hour. We can't go too late, but, you know, we may have to go just late enough to finish our horror movie roundup. It is the Gray Alien Report. We've got one more official segment. Let's see how late we have to go to finish the job. I'm Micah Hanks, along with Tyler Pittman, your creepy guides across the River Styx on this week's edition of That Darkest Corner of the Web we call the Gray Alien Report. We'll be back on this special Halloween edition of the program right after this.
So, Jacqueline.
Yes, Mom?
I wanted to talk to you about something, and... Oh, wait. Hold on. I just got a text.
Oh, wait, Mom. I just got a message. So many comments on my comment.
Hey, guys, check out my new video game.
Mom, what?
Huh?
Pew, pew.
What'd you say?
This weekend, unplug. Getting closer to nature can get you closer to your family. To find the forest nearest you, go to discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
The Captain of Terror right there, Mr. Freddy Krueger himself. You remember that story, Tyler, that Jim Harold told when he came on the program where he was talking about the guy who said that he'd seen or he'd had a dream that essentially involved a Freddy Krueger type character, and that was years and years and years before the actual Freddy Krueger films, actually.
Yes, I do. But I feel like Wes Craven, I think he got that idea from... I might be mistaken with this, a tie story where maybe one individual or a series of teenagers were dying in their sleep or being terrified in their sleep, which we know in Japan, the youth are under such stress that sometimes they'll just commit suicide,
you know,
almost
that-
as a form of relieving their family of the perpetuated cultural shame that comes along with not being financially successful.
Well, you know, that gets into the realm sort of almost the 14 folk devil idea that we worked on.
Right. It's exactly on the surface, because I think ultimately the folk devil idea we're looking at, we might almost have some predictions in that book.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's going to be something that comes together. Nuvi in the chat room asks, do you all consider alien movies to be horror films like Signs or Fire in the Sky?
Well, for me, oh, that's what they said. I was going to say another one that scared the hell out of me as a kid was Invaders from Mars, the remake.
Oh, yeah, man.
That's a
weird movie.
I was always like looking at my mean teachers to see if they had a Band-Aid on the back of their neck.
Well, you know, the ones that we haven't included tonight, there are a number of films that that hit, should have made this roundup, and we haven't gotten around to them yet. That doesn't mean that we won't. But one of the first that comes to mind, there's this iconic film. It doesn't do much for audio, and so in terms of the way that we're presenting these things here on this program tonight, this wouldn't be incredibly well conveyed over the airwaves. But I can describe the scene for you. And this involves the first film, Halloween, with Jamie Lee Curtis. Do you remember the scene? I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, where Jamie Lee, she's hiding in the room, and in the dark, there's like a closet in the back of the room.
Yeah, this is towards the end?
It's kind of maybe toward the, you know, the latter half
of
the middle.
I love that movie, by the way.
Yeah, the first one, yeah, just incredible. I mean, just, you know, again...
Of all the, well, Nightmare on Elm Street is one that I like a lot of them in the series. Halloween is probably the second most perpetuated franchise that I like, many of them. including 2, 5, and 6.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, but there's that scene. If you remember the scene I'm talking about, Jamie Lee Curtis is in the room. She's standing there against the door jamb, and in the closet to the right of the screen, as you're standing, or you're the viewer and you're watching, but in that closet, the face of the killer, Michael Myers, right? Is it Michael Myers in the Halloween films?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, he begins to appear there, and you're seeing him. Well, anyway, we do have
small American town.
We do have some audio here.
15 years ago. Michael? Halloween. I spent 8 years trying to reach him, and then another 7 trying to keep him locked up because I realized that what was...
Now, Tyler, do you remember the Rob Zombie revisioning of these films?
I saw the first one, and I'll give it some credit, I guess.
I thought it was pretty good. Was it Tyler Germain? That played? Now, who is it that played?
I have no idea. I wasn't into them. Like, I wasn't... I'm one of those that is not excited about remakes of...
Yeah, I don't get as excited. But, you know, again, that film was really good, and they did a good job with the remake. You know, Rob Zombie's directorial style, a lot of people, you know, they don't tend to enjoy it, I guess, as much as the classic horror filmmakers. I like his style. It's pretty good. You know, again, going to the chat room, people are asking about Young Frankenstein. You remember that? The Gene Wilder film? Directed by Mel Brooks.
Mel Brooks is what I would call it. Mel Brooks film.
Yeah.
Yes.
People under the...
I'm not a huge Mel Brooks fan.
Really?
I'm not.
No, you like Lloyd Kaufman better, don't you?
I used to.
What?
I know, man. I used to love... I still love schlock, smut, sleaze.
Yeah, you do.
But looking back at some of that stuff, it's like, my God, these guys were just lazy because they had the budget.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Okay, films, horror films that should never have been made. Orca the Killer Whale. Killer Confederates.
What is this? A blog or something you're reading?
No, I'm just naming films that should never have been made.
Are actual films? Killer Confederates?
That was one of those. You remember the story I was telling you, Tyler, about the time I went to Best Buy a little earlier in the night? Remember that?
Yes.
And the three films that were in the DVD collection.
The Clutch.
Yeah. Well, the other two films I didn't tell you.
Pumpkin Man.
No, Pumpkin Man was not one of them. But one of them was Killer Confederates. Talk about the lamest horror film ever.
It's not one I would watch.
One of the other films, actually, on that in that collection was a film that starred as the lead role. The film was called Beyond Evil. Have you ever seen it? Beyond Evil?
No, man.
John Saxon played the lead role. Do you remember who John Saxon was? He was famous for one role, one starring supporting role, actually, that he had. But that was his big break. I'll put it out to the chat room as well. If anyone remembers who John Saxon was, I'll go ahead and tell you. In Beyond Evil, John Saxon played the lead role, but John's most famous role, I think. No, actually, there were two. There were two roles that he played. That actually stand out. And funny enough, another of them was a horror film. One was he was one of the supporting roles in Enter the Dragon, the Bruce Lee film, the last film that Bruce Lee did. But he was also the main patriarch, if you will, in the first Friday the 13th film. No. I'm sorry. He wasn't. No, it was Nightmare on Elm Street. I'm sorry. I got him mixed up. Now, he was the main dude in the first Nightmare on Elm Street film, John Saxon. Yeah. Do you remember the actor?
The sheriff.
I can't remember if he was a sheriff
or not. Nancy's dad?
I just remember.
On Elm Street?
it had to have been. He had kind of the silver hair, you know, the real, just had a chiseled kind of look, you know, just a real hero type dude.
I mean,
of course, Johnny Depp, I think that was Johnny Depp's first, you know, big time right. role too as well. You remember the Johnny Depp death scene?
Yes, that's classic.
Yeah, where he like, I still tried. How do you describe that on the radio again? Just,
I don't know. That's something I kind of wish they had used more in the remake of. I think the scariest inverted room scene in that whole series was New Nightmare, where the babysitter gets, oh gosh, like gutted and dragged across the ceiling. That was really, it's probably one of the best Nightmare on Elm Street scenes.
Yeah. Now the latest Nightmare on Elm Street film with Jackie Earle Haley portraying Freddy Krueger. You know, went and saw that one. It was a good film, but it was a little more, again, a little more sinister than the previous Nightmare on Elm Street films. And I think that in a way takes away from it, because what we can expect is the horrible, cheesy one-liners from Pepperoni Face.
Yeah, I was just rewatching this with Caleb, actually, last weekend.
Why would you guys...
I didn't get to finish it. Because AMC was running like a horror movie
okay.
deal. I saw it in theaters with Jacob and was really disappointed. I thought the only good part was at the very end where, not the only good part, but the best part, which should have had more, was where this, I guess it's at the end where the lady's face gets ripped.
Oh, yeah.
But looking back at it this weekend, I think what really made it lame was how the depiction of teenagers, man, it's just so...
Well, it's pretty... typical, I guess.
It's turn off.
Yeah, it's pretty typical, I think, would be the term for it. You know, there's one series of films. We've touched on Halloween. We've touched on Nightmare on Elm Street. Godzilla, Frankenstein. You know, the old Bela Lugosi Dracula films that never really did it for me. I always was more partial to Lon Chaney and the Wolfman. But I think that there's one that we have not talked about. And I think you mentioned this earlier. Again, I think we could trace it all the way back. Correct me if I'm wrong. Was the director Wes Craven? Hellraiser?
Clive Barker.
Clive Barker. Damn it. See, I'm dyslexic with the names. Okay, Wes Craven did Nightmare on Elm Street. Clive Barker did the Hellraiser films. Okay. Clive Barker wrote that initial... short story called The Hellbound Heart. You familiar
right,
with that?
That was the
it was the impetus behind right. what the film that became Hellraiser. The Cenobites and the Hellraiser films, man. I tell you, that the first Hellraiser film, you talk about a creepy film.
Yeah, well, I think personally 1 and 2 are the complete picture to me, because the second one is not. It's, you know, it's a great sequel.
It is a good, yeah, it's pretty good, although it gets into that weird kind of alternate dimension stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of what, yeah, dude, you got to have that wall crawler thing.
The wall crawler thing, yeah, but I mean, just the scene in the first Hellraiser. You remember the scene I'm talking about where, I mean, like, she goes in there to check on him and he crawls across the floor toward her. Oh, God, it's just absolutely creepy, man. I mean,
help me.
Yeah, those films, I mean, here's this desperate monster, this thing... Who's seeking to get help from this woman who's doing it, who's willing to do everything, including essentially commit murder, in order to help bring this weird little monster man thing.
Yeah, to give him his flesh back. That's what's interesting about those films, is that the Cenobites, or the hell, what you think of as the Hellraiser, is
but
not
it's the
really
man,
the bad guy.
The man is the bad guy. The Cenobites are enablers. When evoked properly, it just...
But they were warning all along.
It elucidates the evil within man. Remember, the evil that men do is often teared with their bones. Yes, indeed. Well, we'll leave it on that note. I'm Micah Hanks, and this has been a special Halloween edition of the Graylian Report. On behalf of myself, along with Tyler Pittman, Matthew Oakley, John Anderson, Dick Oakley, and all the fine folks here at the Graylian Report, we bid you adieu, a happy and a very safe Halloween. To all of you out there, my Graylians, we'll talk to you again next week, and in the meantime, as always, stay especially strange.
You've been listening to The Graylian Report with Micah Hanks. Any rebroadcast or duplication of this program or program content without express written permission is strictly prohibited. The Graylian Report, in direct cooperation with the internet website, GraylianReport.com.